But if they was to try to deal with one of my trials, if you will, they might look at something I'm going through and they might say, well, that's not that big a deal, right? But to me, man, that's a really hard thing. So I think that's why it's silly sometimes when people say, why can't they handle that? Man, it's sometimes certain things are harder for some people than others, you know, and God has made us that way. So when we come to church, we can support one another. We can be strong where some people are weak, and we can be weak and be able to lean on other people that are strong in areas, if you will, where we're weak, right? So we're going to look here in Luke chapter 2, and we're going to start in verse 40. But before we go any further, let's go ahead and pray. Dear Lord, as we come to you in prayer, Father, I pray that you'll just bless your word to the ears of your people this morning. I pray, Lord, that you'll speak through me. Lord, help me speak in a way, Father, that's easy to understand. I pray, Lord, that you'll just give us understanding, Lord, beyond what we can muster in and of ourselves, Lord, to hear what you want us to see this morning. And we love you, Lord, and we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so now we're all the way in verse 40, Luke chapter 2, in verse 40. It says, "And the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him." Now, this is basically covering the time from when Jesus went to the temple for the circumcision, if you will, according here to Luke chapter 2. Just a few verses before this, Jesus was in the temple about the age, just a few months old, really. The circumcision thing would have happened when Jesus was about 8 days old. But at this point in the temple, when Simeon saw him, he would have been just a few months old, if you will. Maybe a month, month and a half old, very young still. But all of a sudden, now we jump from verse 39. Well, from 38 to 39 to 40, we jump forward to Jesus being about 12 years old, right? So the event, like I said, that happened between this time is what we saw in Matthew chapter 2 with the wise men coming to see Jesus. So now we're back here in Luke. It says, "The child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him." In verse 41, it says, "His parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast." Right? So this is something, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, this is something that devout people, if you will, in the Old Testament law, that they would do every single year. They would celebrate all the festivals. They would celebrate all the feasts. They would go to the temple for sacrifice once a year. That's just what they did. Because what God told the children of Israel in the Old Testament was, if you want your ticket to heaven, you got to do your sacrifices. There was this big old law, if you will, and if you want to count those laws out, have fun with it. It's the book of Leviticus. You'll see all the laws that the children of Israel had to follow if they were to be right in the eyes of God. He gave them this because to show the people, they said, even if I give you a list to follow, you're still going to fail. People are still going to fail, right? And now we got the new covenant, you know, and salvation and stuff. But that's what was going on. So Mary and Joseph were very devout. They went to the temple every single year. Now, one question that I've heard before is, why did all of a sudden now the Bible pick up, the story pick back up when Jesus was 12 years old? What, why didn't it pick up when he was 6 or 7 or learning to ride a bike, if he had a bike? I don't know. Why didn't it tell that story, right? Why didn't it tell the story of if I don't know, Jesus threw a rock and broke somebody's window out or something silly like that? I don't know. You know, what happened between that? You know, why don't we see that in the Bible? And I've heard this several times before, and this is something a preacher told me I always say several years ago, but I kind of remember that time's going pretty quick. It's been about 10 years ago that I heard this. But a preacher told me, he said that in his church, when he was on the mission field for most of his preaching life, if you pastoral life, if you will. And he said that one thing that he always did, if he would see some kid in church that came regularly and didn't have a father at home or didn't have a strong male presence at home, what he would always do with that kid in the church is try to give that little kid something to do. And he said it was always about the age of 12 that he would look for these kids. He said, so if you see him, he would ask him to do things like, hey, would you mind straightening up the hymns over there in that pew? You know, or ask him to empty the trash or start giving him some kind of little responsibilities. You know, he talked about the mental shift, if you will, in maturity that kids go through, the boys go through about the age of 12. They'll start changing. They'll start wanting to think more independently. You know, it's not always 12. It might be 12 and a half or 13 or maybe even 11, as early as 11. But generally during that time, boys really start to change. They start to put away the little things. They might stop playing with Hot Wheels, you know, cars and stuff. And they might start doing other things like getting interested in sports, you know, becoming more physical. Or they might start trying to make their own decisions, you know, with the things that they want to wear. I noticed with my boys, he didn't really care what kind of haircut he had, Roddy, until, you know, just somewhat recently. He wanted his hair cut a certain way. He's starting to just think independently. You know, it's no longer good enough that we say, hey, cut his hair like this. He wants it a certain way. right? But they get to that age where they slowly start to make this transition of wanting to make their own decisions, right? And this preacher told me, he said, if I see a kid like that, he said, I will tell him. He said, the first thing I'll tell him, he said, you know what? I'm going to treat you like an adult, and I expect you to act like an adult. But he puts them on that road of saying, you know, get ready for manhood, basically. And he starts giving them little responsibilities here and there just to kind of start growing them up. Because that's the time in life when boys start to change. They start to act a little bit different. We have to take advantage of that. So, and this is, like I said, that preacher told me this, and he said this is one reason why he thinks that they waited until 12 years old, you know, to start talking about what Jesus was doing. And also, too, we see what Jesus is going to do here. He's starting to act out a little bit more independently than Mary and Joseph are used to. Right, so let's continue on in verse 42. It says, when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. When they had finished the days, as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. And Joseph, his mother, and his mother did not know it. All right, so the biggest thing as a parent, right, and maybe some of y'all do the same thing. For me as a parent, the first thing that I key in on here is that Mary and Joseph didn't realize that they left Jesus behind, right? Has anybody here ever been left behind before by their parents? Nobody? Man, I must. Okay, Mike, thank goodness. I don't feel so bad. All right, so Mike did. Me and Mike, all right, we'll have to go out to eat together, Mike, talk about it. But I got left at church one time by my parents, right? They were starting to close up, and my parents lived about 35 minutes away from church. Right, they left me in church. Two times this happened to me growing up, right? But like I said, as a parent, my first inkling, I look here and I said, how in the world did Joseph and Mary forget Jesus? What were they thinking, you know, and all this stuff. That's kind of like my first inkling. It says, when they had finished their days, you know, these are busy days when they go do sacrifices. They're already very busy. They got to get all this stuff done to make sure that they're clean to do the sacrifice. It's not just go take your sacrifice in and everything's done. They go through different rituals depending on how devout they were to make sure that they were clean and worthy to do their sacrifices and all kinds of stuff. So this is a very busy time. That's one, if you want to use that as their excuse, as one of their excuses. And then it says, but Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. Right? Now, Jesus didn't just say, hey, I see a horse over there I want to ride. I'm going to go off and ride that horse. Right? Or I see some kids. It says he lingered behind. This was purposeful. He lingered behind. He did something. He had some interest, if you will, that he wanted to stay back and something to do, right? So he lingered behind. It was something purposeful. He didn't get distracted and forget that his mom and dad told him to go do something. There was something he purposefully lingered behind to do something. Right. Now continue on in verse 43. It says, verse 44, it says, but supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. So when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. Now, this is not, and when it says here that they had, they went a day's journey, that doesn't mean a 24-hour day's journey, that they went 24 hours without knowing where little Jesus was. That's not what it means. A day's journey for at this time, in this place of the world, would start generally at first light, right? First light, the first hour of the Jewish day was considered about 6 in the morning, right? So about 6 in the morning, everybody's getting up and getting ready. At first light, once the sun started coming up, that's when they would start traveling. Then they would travel till probably just before sunset, so they would have just enough light left to be able to set up camp, if you will, get dinner ready. And then by the time it was dark, well, everybody was basically retiring to their tents or wagons or whatever they had. So we're talking roughly maybe 8 hours, maybe 10 hours at the very most, that they kind of lost track of Jesus, right? What, 24 hours. And they said they supposed him to be with the relatives, you know, to be in the company. So Joseph and Mary, this wasn't like they traveled by themselves, right? They went with a bunch of other people, right? Probably a lot of people from Bethlehem and Nazareth and all the people that they knew and other family. Maybe they all met somewhere to go to the temple together, which is not uncommon, right? We go to church with family. It's not very far-fetched to think that Mary and Joseph decided to wait for grandma and grandpa or whoever, aunts and uncles, to go to church together, you know, go to the temple. So they supposed Jesus to be with in the company. They went a day's journey. They sought him amongst their relatives and acquaintances, so they did not find him. So once they didn't find him there in the little caravan, they said they went back to Jerusalem to seek him. Verse 46 says, "Now after three days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions." So this was Jesus' motivation to linger behind, if you will. Right, he wanted to linger behind because he wanted to sit amongst some other older men, if that makes sense. Now, what does that mean? one thing that my dad told me, and it's not just my dad told me, but one thing I've my dad's told me this, and other people have told me, said, your boys, there's going to come a time when your boys get old enough, they're going to stop thinking you're cool, right? And they're going to start thinking somebody else is cool. And that might make you pretty angry. And at this point, Roddy's almost there. He's getting there to 12. We'll have to see how that all goes. But, he said, there's going to come a time when they start kind of disagreeing with things that you do and start saying, look how they do it. And looking at the way other men do things. Start again, trying to exercise that their independence, if you will, and starting to think on their own because they think they don't need you as much as they used to. They're starting to look to others for lessons and wisdom and things like that, right? We see Jesus kind of maybe doing the same thing here. He said, I don't know if Joseph knows what he's talking about half the time, right? I'm very freely, if you will, loosely paraphrasing this, right? But Jesus, I don't think Jesus was disrespectful because he didn't sin. But at the same time, he was just like any other normal kid moving into their teenage years. We can't forget that. He was probably having a tough time. He might have been in the mindset that, I'm not getting enough Bible study at home, right? I'm not getting enough Bible reading and Bible wisdom at home. I'd like to stay here in the temple and ask some questions. He might have, that's probably was his mindset. But that's why he lingered behind. It says, and all who heard him, in verse 47, it says, and all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. So when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said to him, son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. Right? So Mary and Joseph are looking for Jesus. 3 days. They're going all over the place. So if you have a kid and he wanders off, where do you think would be the first place you would look for him? Right? This is before they've really started making this transition to want to be independent. I know if my son, if we went to the mall, or let's say Walmart, we go to Walmart, and all of a sudden I look around, and I don't see Roddy, my oldest son, there. I'm like, where'd he go? And just decided to wander off. That's not usually like him. Nathan's more likely to do something like that. But Roddy, I don't think he would do it. Let's use Nathan, right? Nathan's going to wander off, and he wants to go look at something. Where do you think is the first place I'm probably going to go to look? Probably toys. There you go. Probably go look at toys. I go walking around toys. I don't see him in toys. Maybe next would be the bike section, right? Maybe he's looking at bikes. I go looking at bikes, and before you know it, then maybe he's in electronics. Maybe he's looking at PlayStation or Xbox games. So I go look, go in electronics. I don't see him anywhere. I'm looking all over the place, but before I know it, guess where I find him? He's asking questions of the manager about how to manage people. Man, how odd would that be? That wouldn't make any kind of sense whatsoever, would it? So why did it take Mary and Joseph 3 days to find Jesus? Probably because they didn't expect him to go back to the temple and sit amongst all the scholars there. That's probably the last place they expected Jesus to be. Jesus was probably just like any normal kid, like to run around and like to, like to play and stuff like that. But here we see, this says in verse 48, it says, or verse 47, or verse 48, it says, so when they saw him, they were amazed. Mary and Joseph couldn't believe that he was in the temple. They're like, what is he doing in the temple? Of all places for Jesus to go, he's in the temple. They couldn't believe it. That was the last place that they were going to go try to look for Jesus, was the temple. I don't even know how they ended up back at the temple, but there they are 3 days later, and they find him. They're amazed. And his mother said to him, son, why have you done this to us? They're surprised. They're surprised at this. This tells me this is probably the first time Jesus has done something like this. They can't believe it. They just assume, if I go walking through the store, I don't keep my eyes on my kids 100% of the time. Maybe 80%, I'll glance around, yeah, they're still there, and all that kind of stuff, right? Now, if they were 2 or 3 years old, they'd probably be in the cart with me and I'd have physical control of them at all times. There used to be a time when I used to tell Angela, like, I'm tempted to get one of those leashes for kids because they always want to run off. But I didn't want to be that parent to get a leash for the kids. If y'all did that, that's fine. I just didn't want to do it. I felt weird putting a leash on I would have felt weird putting a leash on them. But there were times when I greatly thought about it. There would be rules that we used to have that when we go to a store, you hang on to the cart and you don't let go. If you let go, you're in trouble when we get home. Why? Because they would want to just take off. That's what they would want to do, or Nathan anyway. He'd just want to go take off. But as they've gotten older, when they've gotten 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I stopped doing that. The rules started to change a little bit because they started being more responsible, if you will. They had the mental maturity, right, or the mental faculties, if you will, to be able to say, if dad tells me to do this, I'm going to do it, right? And they would just walk with me in the store. So naturally, I stopped being so physically controlling of them when it came to staying close to the cart because I didn't think they were going to wander off. And like I said, Jesus is at that point in his age, at this time when Mary and Joseph probably are thinking, if we tell Jesus to do something, he's probably going to do it, right? A lot of the things that they do now is implied. Like my boys, Now, when they wake up, they know that they got to take the dogs out. That's the first thing they do in the morning. They get up, they take the dogs out, and it's not very often that we have to tell them that anymore. They'll just kind of get up and go do it, right? Sometimes we do, right? But, you know, most of the time, they'll just get up and go take the dogs out. I just kind of expect them to do that. Jesus was probably the same way. There were probably rules in their household that Jesus had lived with for long enough to where they just looked at Jesus, they just expected him to do it, right? Now, another thing is back in this time, maturity and child rearing was different. And I can say the same thing about our country here, right? 200 years ago, becoming a man happened at a very different time than it does now. What is it now? The law says 18, right? 18, and then finally at 21, that's when pretty much all restrictions come, or even 25, you know, when your insurance for guys at least drops down. But in our country, you know, 200, 250 years ago, what was it? How young were men were when they were getting married? 15, 16 years old was about how it was. My grandma was 14 when she got married. And that was kind of common, you know, back in those days. You know, by age 14, 15, 16, kids were, I call them kids, they seem like kids to me, but if you want to call them men back in those days, they were leaving their house, they were getting their own piece of land, they were starting to farm it, and they were building their own house at about age 15 or 16 years old, right? So if you look at 12 years old, the maturity level of a 12-year-old to a 14 or 15-year-old, there's not really that much difference depending on the culture that you're in. Like I said, in South America where we used to live in Peru, way up in the mountains, guess what happened at 12 years old? Way up in the mountains, this is how this little community operated. At 12 years old, guess what they did? That was when kids went and got a job, right? I know we think like, what? They're working. Yeah, they went and got a job and they didn't get paid for it. Guess what their payment was? You're getting experience on how you need to act as you get older. So when you actually get into the workforce and you can work legally and start making money, you already have developed a work ethic. You know how to work with people outside your household and stuff, right? So families that will go out and they will find other families that have like stores or businesses or something, and they will ask, hey, can my son, they called it apprenticing, can my son apprentice with you for this summer? Right? And they would make, every year that their kids would go off in different places. One of the kids there, he was 13 or 14, I remember when I heard about this, and I asked him, like, oh, that's good, you're working, how much are you getting paid? And he explained that to me. He's like, oh, we don't get paid. And he explained to me what apprenticeship was. He's like, last year I worked with somebody that made tables, this year he's working with somebody that made doors. Right? And just every year they work with somebody different. Right? So like I said, that maturity level, it's got to be different. And I'm just trying to kind of help us understand the times, if you will, and maybe the maturity level of Jesus and the mentality of the families back then. You know, so 12 years old, Jesus, Joseph and Mary, they're surprised. They can't believe Jesus stayed back without asking anybody. In verse 48, again, it says, son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. You know, we've been worried. We've been scared. Out of our minds, we couldn't find you for 3 days, and then here we find you here in the temple. And then Jesus said to them, he said to them, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business? Right? And that answer has got to be pretty surprising to Mary and Joseph. Right? Pretty surprising. They got to be a little bit taken aback by that. Like, what in the world is going on with Jesus? Right? We know he's the Son of God because that's what Gabriel told us. But man, this is a big change for Mary and Joseph. This is a big change in the parenthood. Now, there's been times when I've heard my child say something that really made me take a step back and reevaluate parenting. And I started to say, you know what? I gotta explain this. All right? We have to start dealing with this. You know, I didn't think it was time yet, but man, it made me change the way we change. Because we might have been planning, well, we're not going to talk to them about this kind of stuff until they're 10 or 11, right? We're not going to start dealing with this until they're 13 or 14, like cell phones. Right, cell phones, we're dating, that was one. I tell the boys, you're not dating anybody until you got a job and you're paying for your own car insurance. That's my plan now, y'all, okay? That's my plan now, okay? We've had many plans already, you know, that have kind of fallen through a little bit because we said, by this age, we're going to start doing this, and we're like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, this happened, so now we got to talk about this. But there's been some things that made us take a step back and reevaluate parenting, if you will. And sometimes it's usually stuff that the kids will say. And it hasn't really ever been in a disrespectful way, if you will. Like Jesus here saying, why did you seek me? You know, what are you looking for me for? I'm off doing what God wants me to do. In Jesus' little 12-year-old mind, he's thinking, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Why are you looking for me? Right? But he forgot to tell mom and dad. Like, you know, I'm sure the teenagers out there forget to tell their parents stuff sometimes. You know, I told you I was going to be out till 12 instead of 11 or whatever. I don't know. But there are some things that already my boys have said to me that have kind of made us take a step back. right? I was just kind of looking at the crowd real quick to see what I was going to say and not. But anyway, so here's one that really threw me, all right? And this made me reevaluate parenting. Angela went to, one of the boys got in trouble, and I think it was my oldest, and she says, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "I did it because Dad does it." I was like, "Oh, great." And of course, guess what? I don't know what happened, but it went from Roddy being in trouble to now I was in trouble. And I was like, I couldn't get out of it. I couldn't point the finger at anybody else. One time I tried to say, "I do it because you do it," you know, telling it to Angela, and she didn't like that too much. But that made us take a step back and say, man, I need to start changing the way I do things because he's watching me. I should have known that anyway, but I don't know. That took me off. You know, just that's what when I was thinking of with Mary and Joseph here, like, there was something that happened that really made him take a step back saying, hold up, we got to start thinking about things differently. What was another one? The boy, I'm kind of incriminating myself this morning. I should have threw Angela more into this, but I didn't. The Lord protected her, I guess. But here's me incriminating myself again. Angela goes to one of the boys and she says, "Where did you hear that?" And then guess what they said? "Well, Dad said it." And I was like, oh man, it doesn't sound bad when I said it, but when the boys said it, it sounds horrible. So I had to reevaluate some of that. Made me take a step back. Like, oh my goodness, right? Here was another one. How are babies made? Yeah, that was a shocking one, right? I didn't expect that conversation till Roddy anyway, was probably 11 or 12. What age did that come? About 6. Oh my goodness, that was horrible. That was rough, you know, I wasn't prepared. Angela came up to me and I tried to get away from it. It didn't work. All right, we got to have this question because I'd rather me explain it than somebody else. Because if he's asking me that boldly, he's probably going to ask Grandpa or somebody. And then I'll get in trouble for my dad, right? But how are babies made? And one question that goes a little bit further than that. But anyway, like I said, there were some things that they really made me take a step back and say, oh my goodness, I got to rethink some of the things that we're doing. I can't say this around them anymore. Me and Angel like to watch musicals. I think I've told you all about this before. We used to think the movie Grease, we used to like that. We thought it was fun. I thought that movie was great, right? We hadn't watched it for years. And we said, oh, the boys like music. Hey, we got to watch Grease together. Boys, let's go. This is a great movie. I remember this. We got through about the first 5 minutes of it, and I turned that thing off. And I was like, I can't believe I used to watch this, right? Just, you know, the way the Lord changes your mind and stuff. But it was just, I had to take a step back, you know, and say, start thinking about some of the things we do with our kids, you know. And I say all that to say this, because Joseph and Mary, and I'm trying to look at, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. As devout as they were in the temple and all that kind of stuff, they were taken aback by this situation. You know, and I had to kind of bring myself down and say, how could I relate to this, right? And I can definitely relate to it on more than several occasions. But they, you know, they were taken aback. They couldn't believe Jesus would just stay behind. You know, and they couldn't believe his answer. You know, Jesus gave an answer very, very seemingly calloused, if you will, towards his parents. But, you know, like I said, sometimes when I hear the way my boys say things, and they don't mean any disrespect by it, but they'll say some things sometimes, and I'm thinking, like, what in the world would you be doing that for, right? And I don't really get mad at them because there was no malice in their voice, if you will. But it's the same thing here. Jesus is saying, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business? Like, come on, I'm trying to do what God wants me to do. But they did not understand the statement which he spoke to them. So they were taken aback. They weren't prepared for this, right? Verse 51 says, then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them, right? And that's an important thing. It says he was subject to them. You know, he's back in that place where he's supposed to be as a child in his relationship to his parents. He was honoring his father and his mother. But his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and with men. Right, so this was a turning point in the life of Jesus where all of a sudden this big shift in his maturity level, if you will, seeking knowledge and seeking wisdom and asking all these questions, right? And it says then Jesus increased in wisdom. He continued in that path, if you will. Once Mary and Joseph saw that he was doing this, that he needed some extra wisdom maybe or needed some extra church, you know, they tried to accommodate that. Why? Because it says that Jesus was subject to them, right? It does say that. But then it says also that he increased it. He kind of kept on that path. He kept on that path where his wisdom was going to continue to increase and his favor with God and men, right? So he continued on with that. Now, I was telling the youth one time that the book of Proverbs is a powerful book of wisdom, right? The book of Proverbs in Proverbs chapter 1, I think it's verse 7, says the, let me just look at it real quick. Proverbs, you all want to turn there real fast. Proverbs 1, talking about wisdom, 1:7. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I was telling the youth one time, it's like, you know, as we see Jesus here, you know, increasing wisdom and learning, you know, we can do the same thing. How do we increase in wisdom? How do we increase in learning? We're never too old to learn something new. I'll tell you that. And that was told me to me by somebody else. We might think we're too old to learn something. I used to think that, but you know, as I've gotten somewhat, you know, wiser, I guess you could say, that I've learned that, man, there's still so much stuff to learn, right? And this whole first chapter of Proverbs deals with it says, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The next part there from verse 8 to 19 talks about just staying away from evil. Listen to what your parents tell you. Listen to the counsel of the things that your parents taught you. That's what it says through verse 8 through 19. And then in verse 20 through the end of the chapter, it talks about that wisdom's everywhere. So we got a progression. It tells us there in the first part of chapter 1 what Proverbs is about, why Proverbs is important. In verse 8 through 19, it tells us that you listen to the things your parents told you. Listen to the wisdom that they gave you. Look at their example, what they set forth. And then it says not only that, at 20, now it's encouraging this young man, because Proverbs was written to young people, basically, that are starting to get off on their own. It's encouraging not to only take heed to what their parents told them, but then it says, now you go further and you continue to seek wisdom. And it says, wisdom is everywhere. Wisdom is to be found everywhere. So when I was looking at Jesus being 12 years old, and I said, man, it could almost really mirror up to Proverbs chapter 1 really well. Because he understood the first part, the importance of gaining wisdom. He understood there, as we just saw in Luke chapter 2 at the end, that he was subject to his parents again. He understood that looking to them for their example. But also, as he grew in stature and grew in wisdom, he understood the importance of, guess what? We got to continue to gain wisdom. We got to continue to look for it. One thing that's neat about verse 20 all the way through verse 33, it says that wisdom is everywhere. And I'm paraphrasing that passage. Wisdom is everywhere. So I take that pretty literally. I tend to be a smart aleck sometimes. Angel will tell you. My parents will tell you. Oh, man. Anyway, I can be a smart aleck if I'm not careful. Very, very sarcastic, and that I like to be that sometimes. It's funny to me. I don't know. Some people don't think it's funny. I think it's funny. But I don't do that freely too often. You know, it's just not smart, right? We know that. But anyway, so I looked at this and I said, oh, God says wisdom is everywhere. And I might have told you this story already. But I got in trouble in basic training one time. And I got made to stand at the position of parade rest with my nose against the wall for like almost 3 hours, I think. Long time. So I'm standing there and I got in trouble. And this passage popped into my head. And I was already angry about getting in trouble, you know, because of something. I didn't remember what it was. I had something with the laundry room. Somebody left their laundry bag in the laundry room. And that was it. And we all got in trouble. And since I was in charge of our platoon at the time, I was like a group leader. I'm the one that got in trouble. Everybody else got to go to eat dinner. So I'm standing there with my nose against the wall, and this popped into my head and says that wisdom is everywhere. And I said, Lord, and I'm already kind of angry. You know, maybe I had an attitude with God, and Lord, forgive me if I did. And I think I did. But I said, Lord, here I am trying to do what's right. I'm the one that got in trouble for it, right? So that was my mindset. And then all of a sudden, Proverbs chapter 1 pops in my head that wisdom is everywhere. And I said, Lord, you said wisdom's everywhere. How am I going to find wisdom staring at this wall right here? Right, so there I am staring at this concrete wall. My nose is up against it. My nose came off of it. I was going to be in trouble, so it didn't come off. There I am sitting right there. And sure enough, I could see that. You ever see those really tiny little red bugs and ants and stuff that will crawl around and stuff? So I saw one of those things go by. And I could start, as I saw that, I started noticing other little bugs, you know, crawling around on the concrete. And so guess what that did? That started making me wonder, how small they were, but the purpose that they had in life. It made me remember that Jesus talks about here in Proverbs about how the ant is not a lazy animal. It works all summer to prepare for the winter, right? And it's very wise in how it spends its time. So I started thinking about all these things. And before I knew it, that almost 3 hours had gone by. And I've been sitting there like giving myself a lesson on the little bugs crawling around on the concrete. And that made me realize, you know what? There is wisdom everywhere. There's wisdom everywhere. I was staring at this wall for almost 3 hours, and I learned something, believe it or not. You know, not only to remember to check the laundry rooms and make sure they were clean, but at the same time, I learned about some bugs, right? So what's the point in that? When it talks to growing in wisdom, a Christian, you know, Jesus there growing in wisdom, a Christian young person growing in wisdom, the normal unbeliever, a normal person that's not a Christian will go through life, and he would have stood against that wall and not learned anything other than just, don't forget to check the laundry room, right? And deal with it. You know, stand there and deal with that. But you know what? As a Christian, we can reflect on things in the Bible. And not only did I learn about making sure the laundry room was clean and nobody left their laundry bag down there, I also learned a little something about bugs, right? While I was standing there. So I learned a little bit extra because I reflected on things in the Bible. Right? It's the same thing with Christians and young people. As you grow up and you're looking at the lessons, you already have a lot of lessons you got to learn in life anyway. Goodness gracious, all the lessons that young people got to learn nowadays. But as you do that, if you reflect on things in the Bible, you're going to gain a little bit something extra that non-Christians are not going to gain. And that's going to put you head and shoulders above other people when it comes to wisdom. It might not seem like it, but all those extra lessons add up. I'm telling you, they add up. And you become more wise, and people are going to be surprised, just like they were surprised with Jesus. They couldn't believe that Jesus was asking some of these questions that he was asking. There's a radio program that I like to listen to. I've mentioned this before. It's called Pastor's Perspective. And we just saw there that Jesus was asking all these questions to the scholars in the temple, and they were surprised. They couldn't believe it. Sometimes I'll listen to that radio station, and you'll have kids will call in. When I say kids, I'm talking like 6, 7, 8-year-old kids. You know, their parents let them call in. And they'll ask some pretty wild questions that they're very hard to answer. And usually on this program, they'll have the radio host, the program host, and they'll have also two scholars, let's say. They might be two professors at a Bible college somewhere, or two preachers that have been preachers for a long time or whatever, and they just receive phone calls. Well, the hardest questions that they've had come across, as long as I've been listening to it, have always been the ones that the kids ask. One time a kid came on there, and he asked one of these scholars, he said, Why are we offered the opportunity for forgiveness, but Lucifer never was offered the opportunity to be forgiven? That's a question from one of these little kids. I'm thinking like, what in the world? That's a hard question to answer. Why are we offered forgiveness, but the devil was never offered forgiveness, even though he only sinned one time? Right? I'm like, wow, that's a pretty deep question for a little kid to be asking. Right? Another one was, what possessed angels to want to sin in the first place? Why did they want to sin? If they lived in such a perfect place, why did they want to sin and go against God? I mean, you can imagine these scholars are like fumbling, trying to, you know, get this question, you know, answer the question for these kids. But you know, it's pretty interesting. Kids will ask some pretty deep questions. Kids will ask some deep questions, you know, especially when they start getting to that age of wanting to exercise their independence. You know, do your best to accommodate that, you know, with your grandkids. Or, you know, I see Nick back there, and I was asking the other day, I was like, why aren't you asking more questions, Nick? I know you got them. Right? Ask some questions. You know, ask all these questions you want, because there's so much learning to be had, you know, when you're in an area or in a place where you feel comfortable asking questions. All right? So that's the end of the lesson today. Jesus is 12 years old now. Next week, we're going to talk about the early ministry of John the Baptist. We're going to see Jesus and his baptism. And we might also get into Jesus spending 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness, you know, and being tempted by the devil, depending on how far we get and how the Lord leads, all right? So, like I said, I thank you all for being here today. It's a beautiful day out. Go out and enjoy the sunshine. But first, enjoy some baked potatoes and chili, all right? Pray for our church. Pray for our church. I say it every week, and I hope that I'll always remember to say it. But, you know, pray one for another. We all have problems. We all have little things that creep up, you know, and it's nice.